live from Burbank, California, where they recently uncovered a conspiracy to blow up Wilford Brimley's Tower of Donuts. It's the Mark Maron Show, and now he's waging a war against fat. Mark Maron.
And I'm succeeding, Jim. Thank you. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Of course, you lurking conservatives, mead machines and pain sponges. Happy birthday, Gypsy. That goes out to one of our original bloggers from the old days. It's her birthday today, man.
Really?
Yeah, and she put a recipe for ice cream in a bag up on the blog.
In a bag?
Yeah, you can make ice cream right in a bag. Who knew? Two bags, actually. Anyways, happy birthday. Also, I want to do a little more blog business real quick. My buddy out there, and I think he goes by Orbit Boy on the blog. He's out there in Austin, and he just wanted to make sure. He said, love the show Thursday as usual. Just so I don't look like I was talking out my arse, I wanted to clear up that the pedal steel player Polly Parsons was talking about, Sneaky Pete from the Burrito Brothers, was not the guy I saw at the store. I saw the guy from Graham and Emmylou's band later on, Neil Flons. Just wanted to clear that up. And I thought I'd do him that favor because I hate the guy to be sitting there thinking like he looks like an idiot on a radio show that everyone's going to hear. Also, in relation to Polly Parsons and Charlie Turrell, their play, their show, Taking the Jesus Pill, mm-hmm. got a rave review in the L.A. Times today. Absolutely just a rave. You should go to, takingthejesuspill.com, something like that, and maybe go see it. I think I'm going to go see it next Wednesday. But really, it's
audience participation, isn't it?
Well, it's just crazy. It's just a rock and roll, sexual freak show is what it is. It almost sounds like a chaotic burlesque.
That's all you, man.
Of southern rock and decadence. Well, it might, literally it's weird because I think about going, I'm like, it sounds a little loud and a lot of stuff going on. I don't know. You know what I mean? Sounds like it'd be, I was thinking about this today, because I was thinking about a lot of stuff, and I'm going to try and focus on a few things, if I can. Let me tell you who's on the show before we get into the whole rigmarole of whatever the hell is going on in my brain. Today we have Randall Fitzgerald, the author of The 100-Year Lie, How Food and Medicine Are Destroying Your Health. This is one of those books that is completely horrifying and sells very well. I don't know if he's a fear-mongering crap merchant, or if he's the real deal. Like, no matter what happens, we're going to get flack for putting this guy on because he basically says that if you breathe, you're toxic. That all of us have thousands of chemical pollutants in every cell of our body. It's like a body apocalypse, according to this guy. And he's got all the stats and facts and myths and this and that. And apparently, Jim, the only way you can fix it.
Yes.
Wheatgrass. If you drink a shot of wheatgrass every day...
Really?
Oh, my friend, yes.
Doesn't wheatgrass have pesticides in it?
That's a good question. Why don't you write that one down for Randall? Yeah, that's a good question.
Pesticides.
Not if you grow it yourself. Everything apparently has pesticides in it. There's no way to avoid them, but let's get into that when we talk to him. The other thing... What was I? Was I getting at something? Oh,
yes.
The rest of the show. I remember. So Martha Wainwright's going to be here. She's a singer, a songwriter. She's a performer in the Leonard Cohen tribute film, I'm Your Man. She's going to be here with Leon Lundson, the director of the film. Andy Kindler, I think, is coming. I tried to confirm with him today. I think he's coming. He's one of the funniest men in the world and not afraid to be bitter and take on the big. He'll take on the big things. Andy Kindler will look show business in the face and tear it a new one, shamelessly. Will not apologize, does not care about his reputation. Will take down sacred cows like Dane Cook. Will take down things like American Idol. Will take them down and put them in their proper place.
He's a very important man in the business.
He's one of the only few outspoken critics of the business, which I like about him, and he does it very funny. Now, let's talk about this other thing. Let's talk about these clowns they busted in Miami, but the buck stops here with me on this one. I mean, if this thing stinks, all right? Between Rick Santorum and that other monkey getting up there yesterday claiming they found weapons of mass destruction because they found mustard gas canisters that were buried before 1991. Between that and the mixed messages coming out of Casey, General Casey in Iraq about troop levels, Rumsfeld mixed messages, all this stuff is this full court press to screw with the nation's mind. as we head into these midterm elections. But this one takes the cake. And why the mainstream media, you know, buys this crap? Why do I got to look at AOL on my browser and see a picture of the Sears Towers? Because these six or seven Haitian clowns, who were not a threat to anything. They can't even sell this as a threat to anything. These guys they busted in Miami with an Al-Qaeda shill. They created the Miami terrorist force, created an Al-Qaeda operative to try to trap these guys, this terrorist cell. So this terrorist cell, real smart guys with names like, here are their nicknames, Brother Sunni, Brother Naughty, Brother Levi, and Brother Levi L, and Brother Rot.
Brother.
Sure, these are the nicknames they gave themselves. And apparently in the neighborhood, the kids said they seemed weird. They seemed brainwashed, and sometimes they would cover their faces, and other times they'd wear turbans, but not always. All right? But here's what they asked for from this fake Al-Qaeda rep. Mm-hmm. They said, we're going to need boots, uniforms, machine guns, radios, vehicles, and $50,000 in cash to help build an Islamic army to wage jihad.
Hey, I need that to help build my career.
Dude, this is like seven guys. All right, seven guys. And this is what they're asking the Al-Qaeda guy for. We want really nice uniforms, man. Something flashy. And we're going to need Hummers, a few Hummers. I mean, they're clowns. That's got no bearing on anything.
They're idiots. Anybody knows that a Hummer can't get them from Miami to Chicago?
But it's just that the press is treating this as if there's some progress has been made on the front of
you think
national
they are?
Terrorists.
You think that I don't think the press is going to... AOL, that's the press.
That is the press.
AOL?
Dude, who are you thinking is? You don't think that the right's going to try and get traction on this? It all coincides with the cut and run frame, and then the troop level frame.
I think they're going to try to get traction, of course. But you know, I think when the dust clears, I think most Americans are going to sit back and go, that wasn't really
anything.
Yeah,
but you don't understand that. You do understand. I'm not yelling at you. I'm just saying that I think that half the people, because of Rick Santorum's frame about the weapons of mass destruction, will say, "Look, they found some."
Of
and
course.
Stop the conversation at that.
I think ultimately the American public isn't going to, you know, go for it, though. I don't know why I'm saying that. I don't usually say the American public is that smart or intuitive. But I don't, you know, I think they're going to look at this critically.
They couldn't even, Gonzalez couldn't even sell this bill of goods. He says, Alberto Gonzalez says there was no immediate threat. This group was more aspirational than operational. It was a show. This is political theater.
Owners of the Sears Tower said that, too, that there was no real threat.
This is political theater being used. And the sickest thing about the political theater that's going on is that Chuck Hagel, despite the fact that he's going to be the Republican candidate for the presidency in 2001, is the only guy that, you know, spoke with respect about the troops in Iraq. You know, all that should have been on the news today is the fact that, you know, Baghdad was under lockdown because there was so much violence going on in the capital there that they can't even control it. I think four U.S. soldiers were killed over the last couple of days in this violence. And these guys are trying to get traction out of success in Iraq, and they're calling Democrats wussies. All right? That is shameful that you have people like John Warner who is saying that we have to seize the opportunity that we have momentum now around Zarqawi and Bush's little trip there. And Chuck Hagel, you know, despite the fact that he's a Republican, despite the fact that, you know, he's not going to pull anybody out, he said, quote, "War should not be drugged down into the political muck. America deserves better. Our men and women fighting and dying deserve better," end quote. That, to me, is noble. He's laying a path for a presidential run, but nonetheless, all these other guys pay no heed to what those guys are going through over there, and they only see this war and this Zarqawi death and Rove coming out and saying that the Democrats are wusses as political traction to move their party forward, completely disrespecting anybody who's dying over there. And a couple of days ago, Chuck Hagel said, quote, that the war should be taken more seriously than to simply retreat into focus group tested buzzwords and phrases like cut and run, catchy political slogans that debase the seriousness of war, end quote. Now, that's a Vietnam veteran, but none of these other guys are addressing that. They're all going, yes, we've got traction. Not to mention that these guys are stuck in the middle of this Civil War crossfire, and they're being used as bait. And then the Democrats, Jim, what the hell is that? What the hell? I mean, they can't make their mind. They're like, yeah, they should leave, but maybe not now. I mean, what is that? Is that a stance?
Here's what I say about the cut-and-run wussy Democrats thing. Democrats are not wusses. They've supported some of the worst military disasters of all time. Korea, Vietnam. Come on. Is that a being a wuss?
Well, no. I'm just saying they're trying to characterize. Yeah, I understand your point. But John Kerry said setting a deadline to redeploy U.S. troops from Iraq is necessary for success in Iraq. And he and Feingold were the only ones that made a concise stand. The other ones, they were on this weird fence where they were saying nothing.
My serious question is, what happens if you immediately draw out, though? I mean, that's going to be a disaster worse than this right at the moment.
All right, so you're being a good Democrat, apparently. We'll be right back with Randall Fitzgerald.
And now Britney Spears drives with him on her lap. Mark Maron.
Yeah, that's right, Jim.
What's that like?
I just think that if we don't pull out, it's going to go on forever. At what point do you make a choice?
I agree, but, you know.
But you're saying that after what the Rod Nordlund said, that we're going to be in trouble in terms of the chaos that could ensue. Iran is already training Shia militias. I mean, you're right.
There'll be warlords everywhere.
Yeah, but at some point, someone's got to make a decision. They're not going to take the base out of Iraq, probably. But at some point, you know, they've got to manage their own situation, even though we caused it. Anyways, I don't know. It's just I cannot stand the politicization of it and how they're using it and the Democrats' seeming inability to stand up to it. Folks, let me ask you a question. Do you use plastic containers to store food or drinking water? Do you use deodorants, shampoos, soaps? Do you ever drink tap water at home or at restaurants? Do you breathe air? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are on your way to dangerous toxicity levels in your body, according to our guest, Randall Fitzgerald, author of The 100-Year Lie, How Food and Medicine Are Destroying Your Health. He's on the phone with us now. Welcome to the show, Randall Fitzgerald.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be with you.
Thank you very much. I just want to make it clear, you're not a doctor. You're an accumulator of facts, right?
I'm an investigative journalist who simply looked at patterns of information.
Right on. All right, so this is one of those books that you read and you realize that just about everything is bad, and we are all just walking pollution containers with little chance of avoiding environmental, industrial, chemical pollutants in our food and water, right?
Well, we're all guinea pigs in this experiment, this chemical experiment called modern civilization, no doubt about that, and there's no instruction manual.
If we're going to just look at your book in a broad sense, what are the major dangers? What are the ones that are the most toxic and the ones that are the most unavoidable?
Well, our wastewater treatment plants and our water purification plants are not designed to filter out most of the chemical toxins that we're putting into those systems.
Mm-hmm.
We know that because the U.S. Geological Survey and its groundwater testing throughout the country is finding everything from Ritalin and Prozac and the entire range of pharmaceutical drugs in these waters, along with all the industrial chemicals and the chemicals from personal care products like musk fragrances. This is an interesting one. About 5 years ago, some marketeers with the various manufacturers decided to find out what fragrances people really like, and they discovered that musk is one of those popular ones in our culture right now. So in the last 5 years, 1,500 products have now added synthetic chemical musk fragrances. Well, these fragrances, these chemicals are almost indestructible. They go right through wastewater treatment plants, right into groundwater and streams and rivers, and they're changing the sexual orientation of fish. You know, fish are being born now with both male and female sex organs.
That happened to a friend of mine. It was weird.
Well, imagine if you put on your deodorant and suddenly one day it begins to happen to you thanks to these musk fragrances.
And then you also said something about, okay, so now we got the water pollution because it can't be filtered out, so it's just a bevy of chemicals because it comes back around to our drinking water. And on top of that, you cite fluoridation of the water as a negative.
Well, the problem with fluoridation and chlorine and all these other chemicals that are now going into tap water is the hidden role of synergies. Synergies are the impact of two or more of these chemical toxins interacting together and creating powerful effects, much more powerful than any individual chemical on its own. That's a key finding in this book, is that medical science is just beginning to look at the role of chemical synergies in triggering illness and disease and our genetic susceptibilities to genetic illness and disease.
So now, okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of these the modern diseases that, you know, obviously heart disease because of diet and fat and everything else. I mean, that's a known quantity. But some of the ones that that may not be known because of industrialization, because of the introduction of petrochemicals, are, you say that starting in the 20s, autism is introduced, breast cancer is introduced, this testicular problem in terms of generating sperm, and infertility is introduced as a result of industrial toxins.
That's right. Cancer went from about 3% of all deaths 100 years ago to now 20% of all deaths. And you go across the board. Yes, autism was unknown 100 years ago. Type 2 diabetes was unknown 100 years ago. All the syndromes, you know, whether it's a Gulf War syndrome, irritable bowel syndrome, chemical sensitivity syndrome, all the syndromes that we've seen emerge over the last few decades, of course, were unknown 100 years ago. If you plot on a graph, as I did for this book, the production of synthetic chemicals since World War II, and you lay that graph of the increase over a graph of the increases in all of these various illnesses and diseases, the graphs practically match, and I don't believe it's a coincidence.
Okay, so Randall Fitzgerald, when you say experiment, what you're saying is that, you know, the FDA doesn't really effectively protect anybody. They are pimped out by drug companies, and they don't really do any real research as effective as you might want them. They're not to be trusted per se. So when you say experiment, you're saying that companies, for whatever reason, for profit or for food preservation, for profit, create these chemical additives or put these chemicals into the world, they're not really thinking ahead at all.
Well, of course not. It's conveniences of modern life, and we all make our choices about which conveniences we're going to rely upon, and we have a lot of denial about the trade-off in our health and safety for our dependence on a lot of these conveniences of modern life. You mentioned the FDA. Let me give you one quick, vivid example of where the FDA
failed. All right, why don't you hold that thought, and we're going to take a break, and we'll get it when we come back. Okay?
Absolutely.
All right. We're talking to Randall Fitzgerald, The 100-Year Lie, How Food and Medicine Are Destroying Your Health. We'll be back with him momentarily.
And now he gets his Prozac on tap. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Our guest on the phone is Randall Fitzgerald, the author of The 100-Year Lie, How Food and Medicine Are Destroying Your Health. And he was about to tell us an example of the FDA not doing anything for us. What do you got, Randall?
Well, the FDA, we all know that the FDA was designed originally to ensure that our drugs are safe. They're supposed to require companies to conduct safety studies, but it was revealed a couple of months ago by the FDA that about 63% of all of the studies that were supposed to be performed by pharmaceutical companies were never performed. In fact, many of these pharmaceutical drugs in circulation were approved, and then the long-term health studies were absolutely not performed, 63% of them. That leads to another statistic. The American Medical Association tells us that every year about 106,000 Americans die from adverse reactions to the synthetic chemicals in prescription drugs. It's no wonder. If we don't have the safety studies in the long term, we've got 106,000 Americans dying as guinea pigs in the experiment, which is demonstrating that many of these drugs are dangerous to health.
Okay, all right, but let's. Okay, I understand that, and I think that I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we have to admit on some level that despite that, not that those people should be sacrificed by any means, but we have benefited from medicinal progress in the West. Western model, yes?
Well, let's look at it incrementally. If we look at individual chemicals over time, in the short term, yes, there can be benefits. In the long term, and this is my contention about the core theme message in the book, that is a 100-year lie. What has happened over the course of 100 years? We have been sold the idea that synthetics are an improvement over nature, over the naturally occurring foods and medicines of nature. And it's that belief that's become a healthcare system disaster.
Well, unfortunately, not unlike the war in Iraq, we have a situation here that is almost irreparable in terms that the odds of us returning back to the garden, so to speak, is no longer an option.
The genie is out of the bottle. Toxin's genie is out of the bottle.
Okay.
You can't escape.
Right. Okay, well, great. Well, that's a positive message. Let's just end it there. Now, I'd like to focus in terms of, instead of like on the hopelessness of the whole thing, there is some information that I think that some of my listeners know, but they might not know. Look, I got a lot of flack. I had that woman on, the anti-aspartame lady.
Yes.
You know her?
There are a lot of them, actually. I don't know.
You know, and I believe that. I believe that certain people have sensitivities to certain things that they can't know, that no one could know, and that stuff is poison to some people. Other people adapt. I think your book makes a contention that, you know, this may not be an adaption. It might be a mutation. But it seems to me that people are living longer and people are adapting to some of these to these toxins. Not that they should, but they are, yeah?
Why are people living longer? I believe it's because of technology. Heart pacemakers, kidney dialysis machines, life support systems.
Genes.
That's keeping us alive longer.
Yeah.
It's the quality of our health while we're alive that's the key question for me in this book.
Okay, so let's talk about these. Before we go, I want to talk about, in the book you list the several myths that we cherish. Let's go over some of those and just debunk them, or you explain to me why they're myths.
Sure. One of the myths is that there's truth in labeling. There is not any truth in the labeling of the products.
Well, some of them you can't even understand.
We see, if you look on the ingredient labels, you'll find words like natural and fragrance.
Oh, yeah.
And inert. My favorite is inert.
Yeah.
Manufacturers saying, oh, well, these chemicals,
sure,
yes, we add them to these products, but, you know, they don't really do anything.
Right.
Well, if we begin to examine the entire motivation for the labeling laws and the trade secrecy laws, we discover that even though the claim is made by manufacturers that they're hiding the ingredients from competitors, in actuality, we know that major corporations have the money and the expertise today to back engineer every product and discover what's in it. So they're not really hiding the ingredients from their competitors. They're hiding it from consumers.
Now, right.
Why are they doing that? Because a lot of these chemicals that are put under natural and fragrances and inert, these generic labels, are dangerous to health.
Right. All right. So let's go to the other, just a couple of these other myths that I wrote down. Plastics are harmless. Now, microwaving in plastic, storing food in plastic, bad, right? Toxic.
Well, it's the chemicals used to make plastics flexible that are the problem. In the presence of heat and microwaves, et cetera, these chemicals are released into whatever is within them, the liquid
and that's,
or
and
the
that's
food.
Proven? That's proven?
Yes. It is proven.
Right,
PFOA is one of the chemicals in particular. It's one of those indestructible chemicals that the molecules of which attach to dust particles. They travel the air currents. That chemical's being found in polar bears in the Arctic, being found in tribesmen on remote islands in the Pacific. It's another one of those migratory chemicals that we can't escape.
Jim, do you have a question?
What would you use to heat up something in the microwave?
Glass.
And I'm sorry, and back to water, what kind of water do you drink? Is there any safe water?
Well, water needs filters. We all need to be filtering water, and especially don't drink tap water. That's a key no-no.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to look for certain plastics that are on the market that don't have these chemicals in the process for manufacturing them.
How about, let's go with the organic food as pure food.
Well, organic food contains traces of pesticides. Now, maybe at levels one-third of what food and the rest of grocery stores contain. That's true. But the pesticides are everywhere in the environment. DDT, for instance, banned several decades ago. I had blood tests as part of my research for this book.
Yeah.
I did a whole series of blood tests, and I found DDE, which is a breakdown component of DDT,
now,
that was at high levels in my blood.
Is this a normal blood test I can get at the doctor? How's your prostate, okay?
This is not a normal blood test.
Oh.
This was done by a laboratory in Dallas.
So I can't ask my
range of chemicals, synthetic chemicals. But the pesticides are everywhere. We can't, whether it's been banned 20 years ago or five decades ago, molecules remain in the soil. They leach through the roots into the plants, and so we're constantly recycling them. That's why I say the toxins genie is out of the bottle.
They leak what?
The molecules leach into the plants.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, also they travel. You might have an organic farm that's using soils that 30 years ago used pesticides, so there's still going to be a residue in the soil.
All right. Well, okay. So let's here we go. We're going to switch the gears here, and we're going to say, here's how we can help us.
Yes, indeed.
Randall Fitzgerald.
Yes,
I mean,
indeed.
I know wheatgrass is part of it, and that should stop all of this, right?
I went through an experiment of having my blood tested and going into a 3-week detox program.
Yeah.
At the end of that 3 weeks, had my blood tested again to see what was the impact on all of these synthetic chemical toxins.
Mm.
The result was a lot of them were leached out of my system, especially the pesticides. Now, here were some of the steps. Saunas, especially infrared saunas.
Infrared saunas? Where the hell you go for that?
Well, infrared saunas are sold. Many healthcare places have infrared saunas now.
What does that mean, infrared sauna?
It's high-intensity energy. It's not real high-intensity.
Oh, that sounds crazy.
And it does tend to squeeze out more volume of sweat than the embedded chemical toxins, especially those organs.
Can I go to a regular sauna, like at the Y?
That helps, too. Yeah, certainly. That's a good
infrared sauna.
Do intermittent fasting. You know, fasting like 24 hours during the course of a week.
Uh-huh.
That stresses the cells of the body. That helps you to excrete some of the chemical toxins. Drink wheatgrass juice. Wheatgrass juice is great for the immune system, a real booster. It's also a cleanser.
Wait, Jim's got a question. He's got a question about that, Jim.
The wheatgrass.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to find wheatgrass that doesn't have pesticides on it somehow. And how do you do that? I mean,
well, a lot of health food stores these days carry wheatgrass. In fact, many of them grow wheatgrass on their own. And you'll find that much of that is purer than.
You got another question, Jim?
I was just going back to the fasting. You know, that's something vets also say about cats.
Uh-huh.
You know, cats that are sick. You know, they say don't feed them anything for a day or two.
Yes.
And they get well. They leach everything. The impurities come out of their system.
Okay, so this sounds good, Randall. We're going to start leaching and sweating and getting rid of this stuff. But you're only a day away from repollution, really, right?
We have to detox periodically all the time.
And okay.
We're just faced with an onslaught, and we have to deal with it.
All right, so that's what I'm going to start doing right now. I'm going to start detoxing. And I appreciate your time here. I guess you get a lot of flack. I did a little research on you. People are kind of hard on people that say this kind of stuff because they think we're overreacting.
We'll see. Time will tell.
100 years.
Yes, indeed.
All right, Randall Fitzgerald, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's the 100-year lie, how food and medicine are destroying your health. I got to start leaching, and I got to get an infrared sauna. It's like I say I'm going to do all that, but I'm not going to do it, but I will eat better probably. Can we get a wheatgrass juice, Andy? Can you send somebody out? Is Kindler here? No? All right, we'll be back.
Now he's revised and updated. Mark Marone.
Marone? Wait a minute.
Marin.
That's Marin, man.
Marin.
Come on. I thought you were my friend. Hey, folks. Martha Wainwright of the famous Wainwright family, daughter of Loudon Wainwright and Kate McGarrigle, McGarrigle.
The Wainwright McGarrigle family.
Yeah, sister of Rufus. She is a unique, enchanting singer-songwriter. Her self-titled CD came out last year and is available at fine stores near you. She's appearing tomorrow night at the L.A. Film Festival to do a concert/screening of the new film, I'm Your Man. It's a tribute to Leonard Cohen. Leonard is also featured in it, so I guess it's more like a concert movie documentary hybrid. Martha Wainwright is featured along with Bono, her brother, her mom, Anthony from Anthony and the Johnsons, Nick Cave, and others. The director of the film, Leanne Lundson, is also with us. Welcome to the show, Martha Wainwright and Leanne Lundson.
Hi.
Hi. I'm so glad you guys came, and it's nice to see you again.
Hi.
You did a song on my old morning show, and we had to bleep a couple of things, I remember. It was good for you. Yeah, it was a little, there's some dirtiness in it. It's very exciting. I can't remember.
This is Air America, isn't that?
Yeah, we can be dirty. Well, this one's better because we're taping it. So, when did you, let's talk about Leonard Cohen, because you're going to play a song for us. So, when did you first get hip to his music?
I first got hip to his music when I was 13 years old. I'm Your Man came out at around that time, and I found an old cassette of it in the house. It wasn't that old because it had just come out, but it, like a promo copy, and I listened to it, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 times a day. I had no idea what he was talking about, but I really wanted to know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And then through the course of listening to it over and over, I started to understand, and poetry became more obvious to me. It's at that age where, you know, things start to happen in your mind. And, he opened up a whole world and he changed everything.
Really? Hmm. Wow. Well, let's play this song, because I know in the film you do a Tower of Song, as does Leonard Cohen with Bono and the gang. You obviously are it's acoustic, and then they did it.
Yeah. But I'm not singing it in the film, but I'll sing it tomorrow at the premiere.
You're not singing it in the film?
No, well, I sing it in the concert that the film is DVD.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I watched the whole thing, and I didn't think you sang in there, because I saw Bono do it with them, and then you came in the studio, and then you made me feel like I missed something.
No. The concert was 35 songs long, and
oh
film,
my God,
it's not all of the
35. Concerts. What was that, like a day? Did it take all day?
It was about 3 hours.
Wow, that's amazing, and you were able to get like what?
It goes by like this.
Yeah, no, yeah. The film is beautiful, and it's amazing how you wove him in and out of it. We'll talk about that in a minute. Can we do the song?
Yeah.
Tower of Song,
okay,
you do it?
Okay,
cool.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, man!
work, no. Well, my friends are gone and my hair is gray. I ache in the places where I used to play, and I'm crazy for love, but I'm not coming on. I'm just paying my rent every day in the Tower of Song. I said to Hank Williams, how lonely does it get? Hank Williams hasn't answered me yet, but I can hear him coughing all night long. Oh, 100 floors above me right here in the Tower of Song. I was born like this, I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice and 27 angels from the great beyond. Oh, they tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song. So you can stick your little pins in that voodoo doll. I'm very sorry, baby, doesn't look like me at all. And I'm standing by the window where the light is strong. Don't let no woman kill you now, not in the Tower of Song. Now you may say that I've grown bitter, but of this you may be sure. The rich have got their channels in the bedrooms of the poor, and there's a mighty judgment coming, or I may be wrong. You see, you hear these funny voices in the Tower of Song. And I see you standing on the other side. I don't know how the river got so wide. I loved you, baby, way back when. And all the bridges are burning that we might have crossed. And I feel so close to everything we lost. We'll never have to lose it again. Well, I bid you farewell. I don't know when I'll be back. They're moving us to tomorrow to that tower down the track, but you'll be hearing from me, baby, long after I'm gone. I'll be speaking to you quietly from a window in the Tower of Song. My friends are gone, my hair is gray, I ache in the places I used to play, and I'm crazy for love. But I'm not coming on, I'm just paying my rent every day in the Tower of Song. I'm just paying my rent every day on the tower, in the Tower of Song.
Yeah. Wow. That was so good. I'm sorry I rushed you into that. I'm just excited you're here.
No, it's fine.
You don't know how long I've been a fan of yours. Like, I get a little goofy. I apologize. But that sounded great.
Good.
The first time I saw you was actually, oddly, it was at, I think it was at Rufus's record release party for his first record.
Oh, my God.
Because he was being managed by a guy named Nick, was it?
Yeah, Nick Turzo.
Yeah, Nick Turzo, who was partners with my buddy John Daniel. Mm-hmm. And they took me to that party.
Yeah.
And you showed up and sang a song, or maybe two. And I'm like, "What? Where's her records?" And then, like, years later, that record showed up in New York. And I'm like, you have to have her on.
Yeah.
So now I guess I'm just declaring my fanness. Our guest is Martha Wainwright and Leanne Lunson. Now, we're going to talk about the film exclusively in the next segment. But, Leanne, what drew you to this project?
You know, first it was the genius Hal Willner played me a couple of songs that he had recorded at the Brighton show. They had done it in Brighton at the festival. And there was a possibility of it going to Sydney at the Opera House in Sydney for the Sydney Festival. And it was really the songs, the way these artists presented them. So I figured that if I could try to film this and include Leonard, I could make a sort of a collage of his, you know, work.
Mm-hmm. And Leonard, like, he came from Canada originally, right?
Montreal.
That's my hometown.
That's
too.
Your hometown, yeah. Too? I know. I went to your mom and your aunt's website, and it was in French.
We'll learn how to speak French. Come on.
What do I learn to speak French?
Leonard
tried.
Can speak French.
Huh?
Leonard can speak French.
Well, he was from Montreal. I tried to speak French, and I actually, I had to prove that I was incapable of learning a language to get out of my French requirement. Isn't that pathetic?
About the movie.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. Anyways, we will be back with Martha Wainwright and Leanne Lunson to talk about the film, which I believe opens the 31st, is it?
It opens the 30th in Los Angeles of June, and mm-hmm. It's open now in New York.
Okay.
It's playing at the Film Forum.
And tonight's the big party that no one can get into because it's sold out, isn't it?
Tomorrow night.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that in a second. We'll be back. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows that the captain lied. Everybody's got this broken feeling like their father or their dog just died.
And now his wig just sold for $10,000. Mark Maron.
What is that? All right. Nice to see you, Jim.
Hey.
Our guests in studio, Martha Wainwright and Leanne Lunson, both involved. Martha is one of the performers in the new film, I'm Your Man. It is a documentary/concert movie about Leonard Cohen, with Leonard Cohen, and with many people paying tribute to Leonard Cohen, including Nick Cave, Bono, Rufus Wainwright, Anthony from Anthony and the Johnsons, who I saw for the first time in this film, and was just like, what is happening?
Man. It's huge, yeah.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Let me make sure I get all this information out. Tomorrow night, here in Los Angeles at the LA Film Festival, they are, I believe, screening this film with performances by you. You'll be performing the song that you just did last segment because it sold out, right?
Yeah.
So that'll be the only place people can hear it. This is a very special thing we just got from her. And the film opens on the 30th of June nationwide. It is open in New York now.
It's in L.A. June 30th. I think it goes wider after that. But
fine.
It's on at the Sunset mm-hmm. 5 in Santa Monica Fourplex.
Excellent. And an album of the entire performance, or most of it, the 35 songs, will be out on Verve in July. Right?
Yes.
Thank God. That was a lot of information, and we got all of it. So
well
wait,
done.
Who else is performing tomorrow night with you? Is Leonard going to be there?
Leonard's going to be there. I don't think he's going to be performing. I mean, unless he's not going to be performing. Well, sure, maybe he will. And but also Julie Christensen and Perla Batala, who are his backup singers for many, many years.
They're great.
Backup singers. They're fantastic. It's a real element of all of his music and all of his songs are his backup singers. And when I was 13 and I was obsessed with him, one of the things that I aspired to be was Leonard Cohen's backup singer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was a dream of mine.
Well, you can do it now if you want, probably.
Yeah. Well, in many ways, I have become.
So who picked all the talent? Whose idea was? Because I mean, there were some people there who I had never seen before, and like I said, he introduced me to Anthony, and I had
Hal Wilner. He's
a genius.
Well, he has this incredible ability to put people with songs and pull all these fantastic talent together in a way that nobody else can. I've never seen anybody do what Hal does, and. You know, it gets all these really talented, beautiful people together who are all really unique and have their own style. And this show in Sydney was one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. Probably the best thing.
Yeah. And now, Martha, do you guys, like, isn't one of the performers Richard and Linda Thompson's son?
Yeah, Linda's in the movie. Linda's a performer. And, yeah, Teddy Thompson, he's a good friend of mine. And
do you all know each other, like, second-generation folkies kind of hang out?
Well, Teddy and I definitely, we're very, very close. He comes out he's opened up for me on the road over the last year a lot. He just made a record with the same producer that made my record, a guy called Brad Albetta. And so, you know, we're totally connected. We're totally intertwined. When Rufus moved out here to L.A., you know, 8 years ago to make his first record, he became friends with Lorca Cohen, who's Leonard's daughter. We're very close with her and Teddy Thompson and Chris Stills, who's Stephen Stills' son. You know, kind of something that you can all complain about sitting around the table. Sort of
complain about your parents and the what are the complaints of that generation of singers?
Moving on.
Come on. Because I know my wife knows Lorca actually. So the weird thing about this movie is I think it's going to introduce a lot of people to Leonard Cohen's songs because a lot of people really don't know of him and what he means. What in terms of, as a director, what do you think his biggest contribution to music was? I guess that's a good question for both of you.
Well, you know, he's a writer and a poet,
mm-hmm.
and I think you know. Those days are rare now when you get these really, really great poets who are able to write what he can write. You know, he's a really, really gifted writer. And his lyrics, when you listen to the lyrics that these people sing in the movie, they are so beautifully moving. And it'd be great for a new audience to find him and realize that, you know, there's great poetry behind music as well as all the other stuff that's out there.
I think the film really kind of answers that question really well because it's not really a film about Leonard Cohen's life, but you're not born. And, you know, I think it really shows what it is that he does and that he is primarily this fantastic poet. And, you know, and I think that really comes across in the film and you really get an understanding of the contribution that he's made to music and to, you know, the English language, you know.
Well, here's a conversation that Bono was having and then followed by something that Leonard said from the film, I'm Your Man.
Some people make doors, carpenters. Some people, you know, cut hedges. Some people are plumbers. Some people are doctors and nurses. Leonard Cohen, you feel, is a songwriter. He goes to work at that. You know, you don't get the sense from Leonard, I woke up one morning and this beautiful song was just, there it was, freshly painted. You know, with him he goes, no, I had to wait a long time for that one.
If it is your destiny to be this laborer called a writer, you know that you've got to go to work every day, but you also know that you're not going to get it every day.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to use that for my writing ability because I
just don't have it today. Sorry.
Exactly. But for me, it's weeks. Can be weeks. A month. What's your writing process like? Do you generate a lot?
I don't generate a lot. No, I don't.
Frustrating, right?
It's very frustrating. It's very hard. But you know what? I don't work at it hard enough. I don't work at it as hard as Leonard has. I mean, I've been on the road for a year and a half, and you know, I tour a lot. More than had the opportunity to, you know, really write, you know. But I want to contact the Leonard Cohen inside of me and try and become more like that.
Your inner Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
Well, before we end, can you just tell me a little bit about Because I read about that thing you did with your brother at Carnegie Hall, the Judy Garland. You guys explain to me what happened
there.
Well,
it wasn't us guys. It was really Rufus. I mean, Rufus has been planning this for over 2 years. They re-released Judy Garland's famous concert from 1961 live at Carnegie Hall, which is a very, very famous record. And they re-released it 5 years ago, and it sort of is the pinnacle of her career, and it shows her in her best light, and the performances are remarkable. And it was just a historical evening in music. And Rufus became obsessed with the record. And, you know, only him, only Rufus Wainwright would have the gall and the belief that he could pull the, you know, recreate the whole concert with the original orchestration arrangement, 40-piece orchestra.
Wow.
None of the original players, but he had, I mean, he had Bucky Pizzarelli, like he had big players on.
Yeah.
Same set list, you know, and intermission in the same spot. And I think a lot of people were, I mean, it sold out right away, two nights at Carnegie Hall. I think a lot of people were slightly concerned that he wasn't going to be able to pull it off, and a lot of the previews were sort of like, well, we think this is going to be great, but, you know, it could be too campy or something. And he just did it beautifully, and it was remarkable, and it was best thing. I mean, it was just so beautiful and so gorgeous, and about the music. And he gave me the opportunity to sing "Stormy Weather."
Oh wow!
And
that's amazing. So that's going to be out. They're going to release that?
Oh
right?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, let me do the information one more time because I think I've got it now. It's going to open in Los Angeles, June 30th. Mm-hmm. It is now playing in New York. Tomorrow night, there's going to be a screening and a concert that you're going to be appearing at. Leonard Cohen is going to be there. We don't know if he's going to be playing or not.
I'm going to do a few of his songs. Yeah.
Great. But no one can get into that because it's sold out unless you know
they
scalpers.
They can rush the gate.
Rush the gate. So that's a direct instruction from the director of the film to rush the gate. But when this film does open, if you don't know who Leonard Cohen is, you should definitely see it. And thank you so much for sharing the song. Thank you for coming and telling us about the movie.
Thank you.
Good luck with it.
Thanks.
He swore allegiance to Al-Qaeda before they went bad. Mark Maron.
I've turned into a giddy child around Martha Wainwright, like a child. Like I was like, oh, the pretty singer lady.
You weren't doing that.
All right. Let me just read this email, because this guy keeps emailing me, and it pisses me off. Hi, Mark. Once again, the Democrats are totally wrong. They have no values whatsoever. I can't. Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, God.
And now, from Radio Halliburton, it's America's favorite late-night far-right radio show, Shark and Awe, with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good evening, neocons! Radio Halliburton, where the truth hurts! Hey, Shark Nation, did you hear about the constitutional amendment to ban burning the flag? Rally round the flag, patriots. Stand up and salute. Whoa, must be a stiff breeze. Get it? I have an erection. Get it? Come on, liberal. Burn my stars and stripes. I dare you. Come on. Come on. Whoa, looks like you walked right into the rocket's red glare. You want to burn something? Burn that rainbow flag, Rufus Wainwright. Hey, let's read an email. Dear Mark the Shark, what's up with John Murtha? He's fat and he's against the Iraq War, but mostly he's fat. Love, Bobby from Valdosta. Hey, you know what? That's a good point, Bobby. Murtha is fat.
Hi, I'm John Murtha, and I want to cut and run from Iraq, but I can't because of my enormous lardy ass. I'm a combat veteran in the war against cholesterol. I wish I was a real man like George W. Bush and not a fat old whiner with giant man boobs.
Hey, did you hear that communist Dan Rather is finally leaving CBS? What's the frequency, Kenneth? That much, huh? You old guys are always in the crapper, like your ratings. Hey, Dan, I bet it takes you 60 minutes just to pinch a loaf. Get it? 60 minutes.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith. Why am I sweeping on the desk? What happened?
Mark.
Did I pass out?
I don't know. I was in the outside of the studio. What are you doing on the desk?
What's Andy Kenwer doing here?
Wow,
man.
You guys should put just a couple of more sound. Just one more sound effect.
We've got plenty. Oh, good one. Andy Kenwer is here, my friends. One of the funniest comedians I've ever seen.
Get out of here with that buildup.
And I am a jaded, resentful person who's been doing this a long time, and you make me laugh. That means you're able to penetrate through the callous cover of my resentment and make me funny.
Rick Reynolds said it, only the truth is funny, baby. That's what I'm trying to do.
But does America Got Talent?
Oh, that is the... You know what? The best part of that show is that Hasselhoff is a judge. Because how many times have you been in a room and someone like, you know what? Hasselhoff turned me around on the American version of The Office. I didn't like it. But Hasselhoff pointed out to me on the phone the other night that in its own way, it's just as quirky and subversive. It's Hasselhoff.
Did you watch it the other night?
I got to Sid the Kid.
Yeah. Oh.
The
what did you make of that?
It was like... The worst that you expect is like when a little kid like just mimics the adult.
Yeah.
Yeah. The horrible,
right?
Hacky stand-up of the 80s or 90s.
And it happened? But you didn't find anything endearing? Didn't she frighten you like a devil child?
Well, she also was like, she's already at her age, extremely mean. She's bitter and mean-spirited already.
Yeah, bitter and mean-spirited.
That's great. What about Rapping Granny? Did you see Rapping Granny?
I have it on TiVo, but I've been hearing about Rapping Granny.
But and also the kid's like 8 years old, and she's talking with the sexuality of like a 20-year-old. Like, you know, literally, you want some of this? Like, what do you know?
Mark.
Yes.
I'm transcribing these shows. I'm not kidding you. I transcribed. Dane Cook's act, I'm transcribing. I transcribed Sid the Kid. It made no sense. She's like, I don't, but what do I care? I drink my own milk. I mean, it was just like she would segue onto these horrible bits. But they really made no sense. And then she used to say that she's going to be fat one day.
You're transcribing Dane Cook's act.
Dane Cook. I have Dane Cook word for word. Like Dane Cook, this is a class. He goes, why is it when you go into a restroom is a public kind of restroom? That's his way he talks.
Yeah.
It's a public. Why when you go in the restrooms are the floors wet and the counters are wet? That's because, you know, people leave liquid on the floor, and then they wash their hands sloppily, and they...
You know what's fascinating?
But he's still confused by it.
Yeah.
Why in the public bathrooms are there fixtures and places for you to go to the bathroom? In the public bathrooms.
Andy Kenwer deconstructing Dane Cook. That's what the next album is going to be by Andy Kenwer. Andy Kenwer deconstructing Dane Cook.
Did you ever think, seriously, post 9/11, post the turmoil, the earth about to disintegrate?
Yeah.
As we speak, do you realize the temperature of the earth went up 53 degrees today? They've said
the highest
it's happening
in 2000
faster
years.
Than they thought. It's going to be an average of 140 by June 27th. And... You got Dane Cook is the number one comedian in the world, and he's talking about the bathrooms, you people! How wet the bathrooms are!
I'll be honest with you. I'm on board with you with this, because I watched him. I never really watched him. And I watched him the other night. There was the performance that you're talking about
Torgasm?
Right now. It wasn't Torgasm. Okay. I watched it with the David Tell Insomnia tour. And what frightened me as much as him, which is that he's not funny. It's all about this, like,
enthusiasm,
like
this
energy.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Tom Cruise. Can't act, but very focused.
Right.
Yeah.
It's funnier than Dane Cook, though.
A little bit funnier. But the frightening thing is that how much the kids anticipate it and how much they look forward to it and how he is their spokesperson, where you got guys like Geraldo and Attell. Granted, they're dirty old guys, but nonetheless, I was always attracted to comics that were telling me something that was like a dark secret world.
Yeah.
Not just sort of like... Huh? Look at me. I had a job the other day.
Well, you know. Also, we were too, all of us who started out, we were all too depressed or conflicted to be that calculated. That's the thing. It's amazing. You know,
yeah,
it's like
the
energy to answer everyone's email all day long and to build this career based on sand, you know, and then to catapult yourself into the highest strata of the business.
But,
you know?
But that's interesting, though. Yeah, because even people that don't like him will herald his ability to have a million friends on MySpace. Like, yeah, I'm not a huge fan, but man, he really did something by tricking those people into liking him.
Yeah, he's like a comedy politician.
Yeah, but I mean, but the whole tone of comedy's changed. I sometimes am concerned for the kids that they aren't more troubled like we were.
Well, Yeah, I mean, but there are. I mean, there's great comedy, but it's just like you feel like the media is just, it's like watching Hardball, you know? It's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
People think hard. I mean, I can't believe people don't go after Chris Matthews more. This guy's like a, he's like a right wing. Like, he'll say stuff like, the other day he goes, a couple months ago, he goes, I think everybody in the country pretty much likes George W. Bush, except for left wing wackos. And you're thinking, this guy's considered like a mainstream guy.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like the mainstream media is not going to, you know, last comic standing. All the, they want to destroy us.
Yeah.
The culture. From the culture up.
But you know what's weird, though, is like, do you ever you read about the history of comedy at all?
I've read Philip Berger's book.
That's an interesting. Well, that's a good book, because that's what I'm talking about. When you realize that there is just not maybe percentage wise, but there was hundreds of comics that nobody knows about. That have just fallen to the wayside. And I feel like that's happening now, but it's always the guys, a lot of times the guys that you don't think should get the prize.
Right, but the thing is, what egg on HBO's face, or as I like to call them, the ENC, the Emperor's New Clothes Network, because they invested in this guy just to get his email list, Dane Cook. You know what I mean? It's like they literally could not have cared. Right. It could have been sight unseen, they would have signed him.
All right, we're going to be back with Andy Kindler and more deconstructing Dane Cook, apparently. Maybe politics. You talk about politics?
I am so plugged in. You don't think I am, but I'm on every issue.
All right, we'll be right back.
And now he can't say nuclear. Mark Maron.
I can't do it. I can. We're here with Andy Kindler, the funniest man on the planet, who has the courage and the cojones to take on show business in the way that it should be taken on. Not in a David Spade kind of way.
But let's see what's happening with Britney. Man, so, thank God people are taking down Britney.
Yeah, really, man. Really, she deserves it. The country has had enough of that.
Yeah.
So do you talk about politics in your act when you go on the road to places like Minnesota?
Well, Minnesota is a good place.
Political
Minneapolis,
club,
that's a hotbed of hotbedism over there. But
very hotbed of ism.
I am just the thing that is amazing to me. I don't know if you guys agree, but is the
yes.
But like, remember, like in the Nixon days, it was like you're always looking for a smoking gun. It's like every day there's like a you could have a parade, a George W. Bush is a liar parade,
the smoking gun parade,
It's like they go. I think, well, if we had pulled out of Iraq, we wouldn't have been able to get that guy, Abu
Zarqawi. Yeah, that was a good one.
And then for a second, you go, oh, I guess, wait a second, he wouldn't have been in Iraq.
If we hadn't
and
been
maybe
there,
we would have gotten him sooner. But they know they're lying as they say that. Oh, they know they're lying.
And then, did you read about these guys today in Miami? They busted a clown posse down there. It's a bunch of Haitian retarded people who ran around the neighborhood in hats with funny names, and they set them up with an Al-Qaeda guy. Did you hear what those guys asked for? The fake Al-Qaeda guy goes, what do you need? And they go, there's seven of them. They go, we're going to need uniforms, vehicles, guns, and $50,000, and we're going to start a jihad.
Right.
They're going to wear uniforms. they're clowns. It's a big setup for the campaign.
Well, I mean, they are, but the thing is, right. It's like in the old days, I used to make fun of you, but I would like think, oh, the Trilateral Commission. And,
sure, the Freemasons, like, the Illuminati.
Because I thought the evil people weren't that well organized. They were just evil on their own. You know, like Paul Simon said, loose affiliation of billionaires. But now, I believe nothing. They could tell me today is Wednesday, and I would, or Friday, and I'll look around to see. Not be Friday.
Because
they've slipped something on me again. Slipped me a Mickey.
Do you think have you become more conspiratorial, do you feel?
Well, no, because I don't believe like the 9/11, you know, the crazy, you know, the more extreme 9/11 things. But I do actually believe in the tipping point, the Malcolm Gladwell. I haven't read the book yet, but I certainly am able to sum up the title.
Yeah,
that I think it's finally going to dawn on everybody in this country that may be the slowest country in the history of the earth that's been a superpower.
Jim was just saying that.
It's going to happen.
Jim has a certain amount of faith in the fact that there is a tipping point being had, that they're not, that people just around this new push to sort of like, the war is good, Democrats are wussies, that they're not going to buy it.
I don't think they will. And then you got Santorum running around
an idiot. Oh, my God. This is a guy that slept with a dead fetus. Do you know that?
What did he do?
Apparently, I think his wife had a stillborn baby, and to teach the kids
about the beauty of life and how important the baby was. They brought the dead fetus home and kept it in the house.
That
for a
cannot
few days.
Be that is oh my god.
We used to
god.
Do that with our pets.
You did, right. Well, that's how you're supposed to do it
right.
with pets.
Is this a true story?
I believe
or is
it
this
is a true
urban
story.
Urban liberal myth?
I believe it's a true story.
Or how
story.
About brown? Well, but when they're not doing that, then they're back to the brown back and the you know indecency oh, and the
yeah yeah brown back. He is like a theocrat. He wants to bring dominion to the country.
And I mean,
what happens to Jews then? What happens to the Jews?
I am so willing to wasp it up.
Yeah.
Should things happen?
You're gonna try to pass?
I will be Italian so fast. I am not one of those people who says come after me. I invest in disguises.
You're gonna Chico Marx it?
Well, a lot of things. I'm gonna turn my fellow comedians in even before they have the hearings.
Jew,
communist. I saw this guy at a thing.
Uh-huh.
And then I make a call. Every man for a mass email. Every yeah. man for himself.
Your MySpace, everybody.
MySpace, and then it's the survivalist thing. I'm fighting my wife over canned goods.
You're gonna go to the hills.
I'm locking her out of the shelter because it's only enough for one. I love you, but
you're
I have
on
to
your
make
own.
It's better that I survive and then move the movement forward.
Oh my God. Well, I'm glad you got a plan. That's what scares me so much when people like you know that's what the Germans said.
Right.
Oh, that creeps me out.
Well, how about this? How about the fact that there's so much horrible things happening, you can't even keep up with it?
Yeah.
Remember, like 2 weeks ago, the people at Guantanamo Bay, they committed suicide?
Yeah.
And then that McCaffrey guy who was the drug czar under Clinton, he goes, it was an act of war.
Yeah.
So now, if you're suicide yourself,
yeah.
It's, you're lucky you killed only yourself.
Yeah.
We would have had to have waterboarded you if you had survived.
Right.
How do they call that an act of war?
Suicide is illegal, you know.
They just kill it. They literally killed themselves.
No, I think the angle was that they were suicide bombers, but they were duds. You know what I mean? They weren't placed properly.
I mean,
no, I know. Every day, Andy, we do it here. We go over this stuff a lot. Every day, there is stuff that makes you go. What that Santorum is another clown. That him and that other guy. I'm spacing his name. Oh, doesn't matter. They
brought back, right?
No, it was, it doesn't matter. But he comes out and makes that announcement. We found weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
That are like 20 years old. They're rotten.
The sarin. Yeah, the
mustard gas
yeah.
from 1990 that has no bearing on anything. But you know what? People believe it. Some people believe it.
Or Karl Rove. I mean, this is Karl Rove. I heard some guy on the radio say, well, Cheney actually is closer to action because he ran the army twice. Or he was in charge of the secretary. How's that? He was never close to action. Cheney. Not one day in his life has ever put his ass on the line for anything.
Yeah, but he's the guy that's
controlling it. How many, right? Five?
Huh? Five deferments.
Five deferments.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, it's really important, though, and I think it's important to acknowledge when somebody takes a stand is when on America's Got Talent, the woman with the parrot came out, did her parrot act, and,
right.
they gonged her. And she said, she looked him right in the eye. Andy,
yeah, what'd she say?
She said, look, if you didn't want animal acts
yeah.
on the show, you shouldn't have asked for them.
You know what? That's a thing that I can actually,
agree.
I really feel that she... Yeah. I'm glad I gave up the rest of it. Now, was she after Rappin' Granny?
No, Rappin' Granny was on last, and you know what they said to her? She got a standing ovation, and the judge said, Rappin' Granny, you are what this show is all about. And the place went nuts.
And Simon Cowell, what a genius. So I'm so glad that he is celebrated in every corner of our country and he's on. Because look at he's not afraid to have opinions about nothing that mean anything to anyone 5 years from now.
I think that they should do an American Idol where they shoot the losers.
Yeah. Let's go further. If you're so into honesty, why don't you cut out their vocal cords if you don't like the way they sing?
Yeah.
You should not be singing. And Simon Cowell, he says, what's one person he's ever backed who had any one modicum degree, if that's the right word, I'm all of a sudden
it's
with
good
the
word.
Malapropisms.
It's like, yeah.
Norm
Crosby
is here.
It's
a very excruciating experience. One person that he has ever championed who had talent. One person. And don't tell me Clay Aiken. I know you love Clay Aiken.
Oh, you knew that, huh? No, I agree. It's not. It's a different. It's not a real talent. It's not an original talent. What it is they're regular people who are not authentic talents who can do something because they try really hard for a little while. And yeah. they're rewarded because normal people who are like them that wish they had even that non-authentic talent go, isn't it nice when one of us gets a break?
Yeah.
It's a populist explosion.
And the contest. Why do we have to have – whoever would have thought we could ever learn anything from a contest with comedians? Like, you only have three plumbers come over your house. You go, look, before I choose a plumber, here's what I'd like you guys to do. You have 10 seconds to hop up and down on a pogo stick and try and see if I have copper tubes. I mean, what have we turned into? I implore you, gentlemen.
Well, I think gladiator contests were always were popular in the old days, and I think, but again, those ended with people dying, and I think that is really what we're missing.
Yeah.
I think that if they're going to have these contests, that they should take it all the way, if somebody loses on Last Comic Standing,
right.
Throw them to the lions.
I had a show I pitched to Fox called Snuff Said.
Yeah,
and people volunteered to be killed on film. Snuff Said.
I pitched a show that was actually shot. It was sort of like Punked, but not as complicated. And the entire thing is shot through the scope of an assassin's rifle, and you just see him going, oh, there, let's just get that guy. He's walking with his girlfriend, and you just see him drop, and then you hear the kids going, and then you move on.
That's like Extreme Crank Yankers, where you call 911 and you play around with them for 3 hours.
How about that? What do you think of Perverted Justice? What the hell happened? And that's a horrendous version of Candid Camera. This is where they entrap pedophiles, and the guy comes out and goes, hey, how you doing? And all of them say, I just wanted to talk to them.
Oh, but did you see the worse than that?
What?
Is that, you know, the voyeur, you know, just how it just seems so sleazy the way they're, the whole thing. They got this guy who had pleasured himself in the library or something like that.
Well, who hasn't done that?
But he wasn't like he wasn't near kids or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, but then they got him and they confronted him, and then that they had tapes of him. And then they went to his home and confronted his on the lawn with his parents. His parents are freaking out.
Yeah.
What public service is there by going and surprising someone's parents and telling them on national television, did you know that your son did this in the library?
Your kid masturbates in the library. Now the country knows. See you later. Have a good day.
Have a nice day.
We'll be back next week when we find another kid that does something. I masturbated on the Staten Island Ferry once. We'll
is
be
that
right back.
Wrong?
I don't think so. Hey, this is kind of a sad story. We're going to come back. I think Cardinal Milfington is going to be here. Stay with us.
Harriet the Turtle is dead. Mark Maron.
Oh, folks, we're here with Andy Kindler, but we've got someone else in the room. The Bible's book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. But we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Probe, Utah. Your grace...
Heed my heedings, heedless hedonizers, for ye have forsworn the gift of our Lord's lard for too long now, and engorged thyself with the devil's recipe of cabbage, tofu, corn dobs, and high-fiber, low-sodium frozen waffles with blueberries and death. It is time to lift your eyes to the wrath of Jesus, ye lumpen couch gluttons, quaffing upon the frothy splooge of Satan's one-night stand. For you've reached your last chapter, you graven worshippers and whatever of obscene books. The devil just autographed your dog-eared copy of He's Just Not That Into You, and St. Michael is about to leg lift 2 tons of retribution up your Brick up your ears, all ye tree-hugging recyclers, organic farmers, consumers of Asian noodles, and the guy across the street who insists on idling his car at 3,000 RPM every morning for an hour. Tap on the friggin' pedal, moron. Birds are dropping out of the sky. I got a Phillips if you need one. For ye are all nothing more than sinners in the hands of an excitable God who refuses to wash his hands after scratching himself. And your hearts become the trampled sofa of a spastic Tom Cruise. In short, the end times are near. You may recall how thrice abdominals ago... I spake it unto you about a popular news story about a bear breaking into a woman's kitchen and eating her porridge. A week after that, I told you how an alligator attacked a man delivering newspapers. And the week after that, I told you there's nothing more offensive to alligators than having to read gratuitous sexual innuendo. But that's neither Otasa Matasa Kapaka nor Check Please. For something so diabolical, so luciferic, so demonic has happened, it'll make insert bad thing here look like insert less bad thing here. Man, why don't I proof these things before I perform?
I don't know, man.
According to the journal Science, which not coincidentally shares the same initials as the phrase Judas Satan, it is now possible to build an invisibility cloak just like the one Harry Potter got from his dad. Maybe, Mark, yeah. If this happens, not only will it facilitate Satan and all his minions to walk unnoticed amongst our Christian bedrooms and cast their ravenous gaze upon our exposed genitals, it will also upset the whole world order as we know it. For now, nerdy kids with abnormally large faces, big round glasses, and no acting ability will never experience a beating by the cool kids. For it was prophesied in Revelation 54:40 or fight, and I quoteth, and the ten horned beast received the power of the kings and did walk unbeknownst among us. And the Lord Jesus Christ did say, okay, who's touching me? Somebody touch him? Come on, guys, stop it. Stop poking at me. This isn't funny anymore. Okay, who farted? That's it, I'm leaving the rapture. End quoteth. Well, there you have it. Soon the loathsome armies of Satan and his hairy nifflers will be leering through the shower stalls at your hairy nifflers. But that matters not to me, for while you're busy receiving a stern Melvining from that guy in the Apple computer commercials, I'll be sitting at the throne of Jesus and his pet goose, Harvey Piddlestone III. Until then, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and I'll keep the light on for you. In hell.
Wow. Thank you, Cardinal. It's so great to see the Cardinal again. Andy Kindler's still here.
He starts out one way. He starts out... The Cardinal seems to go into different directions.
Sure. That's the beauty about the Cardinal. Can we get back to what I was talking about before in the last 2 minutes? Have you ever masturbated in a public place?
Let me ask you a question. When public... is standing on the New York State Thruway on the side of the road, is that considered public?
Yes, it is.
Interesting. Is halfway through my Haftorah reading at my bar mitzvah, if I had to walk to the side to take a break, is that public?
I think that might be public.
Okay, then I have.
The Staten Island Ferry thing was a sad reality in my life, and I don't know why I decided to bring it back. I just didn't want to leave it hanging, but I was on the Staten Island Ferry with my first wife and her parents, okay, going to Ellis Island to see if our names were in the book there, and I'm on this boat, and there was this beautiful... I think she was Swedish. I'm going to go with that. Maybe she was 18, 19 years old with her family and wearing a very short skirt, and I was going nuts. I don't know what the hell came over me, but I went to the bathroom at least. I didn't do it like right in front of people, and I did
right.
that.
But that was, they had a camera in the bathroom.
What if they did?
Yeah, the camera in the bathroom. All of a sudden, you come out, and you got this Schmeckle Schmeeky from NBC News is all of a sudden up your... I can't say that. And he's like, what did you do in there? What were you doing in there?
I would say, well, it's a free world. I can masturbate in a...
Then
in
they
a,
pull your pet mom out.
Yeah.
Did you hear what he did?
And then I would say, well, come here. Let me just show you this girl.
And then that would be okay.
And then he'd be like, oh, well, yeah, okay. Yeah. You're off the hook. That was before the days of cameras everywhere. I'm going to do these jokes now, right, Andy?
Okay, but I just want to say, what? I do get horny when I think of the Staten Island Ferry.
Yeah, I know.
It's hot.
It is hot. So are you working anywhere this weekend?
Oh, yeah. I mean, things to plug?
Like tomorrow, Saturday.
I'm going to be on Air America tonight on the Mark Maron show.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be on Letterman next Thursday.
You are?
These field pieces.
What is that, like monthly?
I wish it was monthly, but close.
And I automatically turn bitter. Yeah, how'd you get that? Here we go. Here's your short order news for tonight. Americans are far more socially isolated today than they were two decades ago, and a sharply growing number of people say they have no one in whom they can confide, according to a comprehensive new evaluation of the decline of social ties in the United States. Researchers from the National Science Foundation spoke with 1,500 Americans face-to-face to get an accurate assessment of people's responses and also because they couldn't bear to spend another lonely evening watching television. That's a long way to go for that. People in the survey said they had very close friends when they needed someone to talk to and absolutely no friends at all when they needed someone to help them move. All right.
In his latest interview, Dick Cheney said pulling out of Iraq would, quote, be the worst possible thing we could do. This week, the Senate voted down two withdrawal proposals, which the Republicans called cutting and running. Finally, a compromise was reached in favor of staying and running. Cheney said the United States cannot just hand Iraq over to the terrorists. They have to earn it for themselves. Oh, amateur fight videos are proliferating on the internet. Some observers make the point that too much exposure to violence on the internet renders it meaningless, to which these fight fans reply, "What'd you say, faggot?" Apparently, the first rule of Fight Club has been canceled. Huh? Maybe if I reset it up.
That's a nice reference. I like that.
Now, please understand that I was saying the word faggot in character. It was in reference to the character in the joke.
And in England, it's
a cigarette.
Fine.
You're going to have Schmeckle Schmicky from NBC confronting you outside. Why'd you say faggot?
Yeah. No, it's a very offensive word to people who are gay.
Really?
You made that sound wrong.
I thought it was like a cigarette butt.
No, stop. All right, so next week we've got Amy Sedaris and...
I love her!
Justin Frank from Bush on the Couch. Have a good weekend. Good night, sheeple. Happy birthday, Gypsy.